Hello and welcome to the Body Electric Podcast. My name is Nathan Hiltz and this is episode 38. Today my special guest is the great banjo player and guitarist Tim Posgate. Tim's got a new album with his collaborative group So Long 7 called Only Elephants Know Her Name. And that's coming out on September 30th. But he's also a part of a really huge new project from the great Ronley Tepper. It's called Everyone Loves a Good Story. It features her compositions, a large ensemble with a cast of great Toronto musicians, and original artworks that go along with each piece, and even a VR experience. It's a huge project, so definitely check it out. I sat down with Tim a little bit earlier on in the summer, and we had a really good time playing music and talking about learning music. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Great. Yeah. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, man. Yeah. So nice to hear your band recently at the Rex when you were doing your month of Wednesdays, was it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's good to bump into you.
Yeah, what a great group.
Thanks. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a fun band. It's exciting having a new band.
Oh, yeah. That's a new project. Okay.
Yeah. I actually haven't had my own band I've been playing in other people's bands, and I play in a collective called So Long 7, but this is the first time I've had a band in a really long time, so
It's
kind of fun for me.
All right, congratulations. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that. Yeah. So first thing I wanted to kind of ask you today was, you started on guitar, right?
That's right.
There was a time where you would even say, I'm a guitarist.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. So played guitar all my life, yeah.
Yeah, so how'd you get started on the guitar?
I was one of those typical kids that took guitar lessons from when I was 7 years old. My parents wanted me to play. I think my parents wanted me to play as much as I wanted to play.
Right.
Played for a bit, and then I basically quit when I was, I don't know what age, maybe 10 or something like that, 11, and just said, you know, I just want to play hockey, and I don't want any of this. And then I got into it again, and my parents said, no, you blew it the first time. So I actually had to promise that I would practice and that whole thing, and they let me have a second go at it. And
right. Seven sounds is kind of young, right?
Yeah. Bit. Well, I mean, I teach. I start them at seven.
You know,
if they're ready, seven's okay.
Yeah. For sure.
But I was one of those, you know, typical guitar lesson kids. Yeah.
Right. Cool. And then you found your way to jazz pretty early on, or?
Yeah, definitely. I was got into progressive rock, which I still love, and Jeff Beck, and I was like, you know, there's something more, and I start reading about them. Do you remember when, Jeff Beck would talk about certain jazz guitar players or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then they were saying his music was jazz, and then some people would say, that's not jazz, and I was like, oh, what is jazz, you know? And so, started listening to, I guess that's where I got into Pat Metheny.
Right.
He looked so cool, I was like, I'll check that out.
Cool.
Yeah, that was definitely my entry point.
All right. Yeah. And then, but banjo. So when did banjo come along?
Yeah, the banjo thing was much later. My wife bought me a crummy banjo, sorry Judy, when I was 30.
Oh, 30, yeah, okay, yeah. Wow.
And so 25 years ago. And it kind of sat in the closet. Like I knew I wanted it, but I didn't really know how to play it. And I didn't know what to do with it. And I didn't love the sound of it, I guess because it was a crappy banjo.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about five, well, you know what? I used that banjo a little bit. I had, around that time, I had a band with my horn band with Howard Johnson on tuba and Lena Alamano and Quinson Natchoff. And I started writing these quirky little tunes. I basically played it like a guitar,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're a banjo player. You can kind of understand what I mean, right?
And
And I wasn't using picks and I just, I was just experimenting. I actually took that crummy banjo on a tour to Europe and it got around a little bit. I was like, yeah, this isn't quite it. And then one day I was watching a Bela Fleck DVD, Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer playing duo.
Right.
And I got to tell you, it was the craziest, weirdest moment. I was just watching close-ups of his right hand and the picks, right?
Yeah.
And I felt like I went into a trance. Like I was just, I was lost in it. And I got up, I turned off the DVD, I walked up to Lauren McQuaid, bought these picks, not these exact picks, maybe these ones though. And I've played every day since. Like, so, you know, probably 20 years, I guess. Yeah.
That takes a lot of guts to go on tour. I mean, like, you couldn't have been as at home on that banjo as you would have been
on a guitar.
No, totally. And you know what? When I listen back to the early records, like with the, even the second record with the horn band is called Banjo Hockey. I love that record because Howard and Quinson and Lena are amazing.
Yeah.
But I wasn't a very experienced banjo player. Mm. I mean, it's not the same. It's not like playing guitar. You know it. You can't take it lightly. As a matter of fact, there's things about it that I find much harder. Maybe we can get into that. I don't know. But so when I listened to that, I was like, yeah, I was a really young banjo player on that record. But, you know, I was going for it. I was pushing it.
Well, yeah. You wrote that music.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah.
That's really heavy, man.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. And I honestly feel that sometimes the writing thing, and I know you know this too, the writing thing sometimes, because you're doing it in slow motion and you're just looping things and everything, you can figure out a lot of stuff. But when it comes to improvising, it's a whole other bag, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. It's been a journey, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah. So what kind of guitar player were you?
Well, see, I play a lot of guitar still. I play guitar every day. I mean, I would say I'm a jazz guitar player, really. Yeah. I mean, I was actually the biggest jazz snob you would ever meet. I studied jazz at York. I probably listened to almost nothing but Ed Bickert for close to 20 years in there. Like, mm-hmm. you know, from the time I was 20, yeah, maybe 15 years. Mm-hmm. I had blinders on. I did not want to hear pop music. I didn't want to hear rock music, prog rock, anything. I just wanted to hear Ed, mm-hmm. you know, and Jim Hall, of course. And so, yeah, I mean, I still love that music. I love those players. And I don't work on it as much anymore, but right. I do love to play it.
Right,
you
yeah.
know, and love to hear people play it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I often think about the relationship between guitar and banjo, you know, and there's a lot of layers of tradition between Ed Bickert and Jim Hall and sort of the five-string banjo and the banjo music of
right.
those early days and
right,
stuff.
Right.
So do you encounter with that early music as well, or has it been more just an instrument that really...
Well, so early jazz music, for example?
Yeah.
I mean... Actually, I told someone recently, how did I put it? I actually love early jazz maybe more than I love modern jazz.
Uh-huh.
Like whether it's Louis Armstrong or Fletcher Henderson or, I love that music.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
really, Jelly Roll for me is, right? All the great banjo playing in those records.
Right.
I got into that music through Bill Westcott, who I play with, a great piano player. And he was my prof at York. And I really got into that music early, and it was on the back burner for a while, and now I love it. It really speaks to me, yeah.
Mm.
So, you know, and now I'm getting interested in, like, earlier banjo. I'm getting interested in, like, I have a Gourd banjo, and I'm interested in, like, you know, music from, you know, trying to figure out what people were playing on those early banjos mm. that were barely banjos, you know?
Right.
African music that's played on the banjo, and, yeah, I'm really interested in going back for sure.
Yeah. But like you do seem to play in a more linear sort of way in a lot of your music.
Yeah.
I mean, using those three picks and stuff.
I know. It's weird. So the three pick thing really is from Earl Scruggs, right?
Right.
And okay. Or in my case, Bela Fleck. But in the same way I did with, you know, learning about Wes Montgomery through Pat Metheny, I learned about Earl Scruggs through Bela Fleck.
Because mm-hmm.
I was into Bela Fleck and he was so amazing. I thought he was really cool and I loved his music. And then I'd read interviews with him and all he'd talk about would be Earl or J.D. Crowe. And so I started learning about bluegrass and playing bluegrass. And yeah, I think I play the banjo a little bit funny. I don't think that I'm... Like, I think I play it a bit like a guitar player. That's kind of mm-hmm. what you mean,
right.
I think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways... I wish I didn't, but then, you know, in some ways I wish I had nicer hair or something. I don't know. Like, whatever. Like, you are what you are.
Yeah.
You practice as much as you want, but you know, you sound like yourself eventually. Yeah.
And
right?
did you come up playing, like, jobbing at all in the bluegrass tradition at that time?
Not a whole lot. I mean, yeah. I've played a bunch of bluegrass gigs. I don't think I've played a bluegrass gig since before COVID, which is not that surprising because that's
yeah.
a lot happened. But it's been a while. I used to play more. I used to have weekly gigs and had a band that I played in, a couple bands that I played in. And I had a band called Sorry Cousins, which was the guys from Slocan Ramblers. That was really fun. We did a lot of stuff and I would write music for that band. So yeah, I mean, again, I would play more bluegrass if there were opportunities, really.
Yeah.
Like, I love the
yeah.
music. It's beautiful music.
Right. Yeah. Would you say that you need to play bluegrass, like, to be able to develop properly on this instrument? Or at this phase, can you kind of pass that? Like, I know with jazz, you can definitely ignore anything pre 1980 or 1990. I mean,
it's true.
You don't need to go back.
Right.
Is that kind of where the banjo is at now, or do you still need to?
It's a good question. I think if you want to play with the picks and you want to play in what people call scrug style, I mean, it would be weird.
Yeah, it'd be weird not to play bluegrass.
Although there are three-finger players that aren't playing scrug style, so I recommend it. I mean, do you listen to that music at all?
Not too much. Yeah, it's such a big world. I mean, I've gotten my dipped my toes with like Doc Watson.
Right on.
You know?
Right on. I love Doc.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sort of overwhelmed by the amount of listening I'd like to do.
I get it. Anyways, I feel I'll listen to bluegrass and play bluegrass until I die. You know, it's part of my life. So
cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we play a tune?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you feel like playing?
Maybe we'll play Echo. That would kind of warm us into. I guess we didn't rehearse. So is there anything you want to know about this tune?
The feeling, the tempo.
Yeah. I didn't tell you that.
Any sort of details?
So I guess there's straight eights, sort of a medium, and obviously the last bar is the bar of 3/4 is the thing to watch.
Okay.
So you can see that it's. As it looks, it's like it's kind of like AAB, right? It keeps going, second ending, and then you boom.
Great. And we'll both take an improvisation.
Yeah. Why don't we play the head? We'll each go through the form once and then play the head out.
Sounds great.
And there's the fine, yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay. And I'll play the melody.
Please.
Well, this will be fun because this is from an old horn band record, actually, and don't really play this one anymore, but I thought it would be fun.
Cool. I remember seeing you guys at the Transac. When I used to live in the annex.
Oh, right on.
Poking in there, yeah.
Right on. With Lena and Quinson.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I lived there for many years.
Right on.
Yeah.
One, two. I don't need to see it if you want to. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. One, two. One, two, three. Thank you.
nice tune. Very
thanks,
fun.
Man. Thanks.
Yeah. What's the meaning of the title?
It doesn't have a lot of meaning. I think literally the echo is just that part that keeps coming back. Mm-hmm. Ding, ding, do, do, ding.
Right.
It looks like it's spelled Umberto Eco, right? The author, but I've never read one of his books, so it's really not a real deep title, this one.
Right. And, so how long has writing been part of your sort of process?
Always.
Always, eh?
Always, yeah. Like
7-year-old?
Yeah. Well, a little after, I remember writing simple rock tunes and actually recording them on a cassette player or family cassette player. And that's a bit vague where I recorded them. But I do remember like the earliest rock bands in like grade 9, and it's all that mattered to me was writing the songs, you know.
Great. Yeah.
And having a band, writing songs and having a band for me is just, it's the center of what I do for sure.
Yeah. It's so nice to I love the spending time writing. Like those hours are, I love those hours.
I find them harder to set aside now too. I don't know why. I guess I feel like time just passes faster as you age, and and all of a sudden, the week's gone by, and you're like, I didn't work on a new tune. I need new tunes for something that's coming up. And I find you have to set it aside. I have to set it aside now and really make an effort to. Mm-hmm. And then I'm so happy when I do it, right? I forget.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the ones we're going to play today, I wrote yesterday or the day before yesterday.
Oh, no way. Okay.
And my wife, Julie, said, you're in a good space today. And I'm like, guess why? She's like, do you write a new tune? I'm like, see? Like, that's it. It makes me feel so good.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And then it's wonderful to have that connection to then playing them with other people. I mean, then that's, isn't that gratifying?
The feeling, you know it, right? When you're liking it at home, and then you put it on the stand for your friends to play. Yeah. It's just like, oh, man.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah, there can be a certain deadness to like, just shedding, you know, my instrument, you know?
No, exactly.
And it's good to be reminded of that.
Yeah, although I get the same feeling when that's going well, like when practicing seems easy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I love that feeling too. Like the hours go by and you're just working on something and it's coming together. And it's when it's going slow that practicing is tough, I find.
Right. You know?
Are you a big practicer?
I am. I do enjoy practicing a lot. Yeah.
Right.
Like various different things. You know, like I've had a bit of a phase of classical guitar
for
the last number of years. And then lately it's been Irish music, you know, and playing that on the banjo and the tin whistle. And
amazing.
Maybe the guitar. Not too much the guitar, though. I'm more into playing the lead stuff. So.
Right on.
But yeah, I do love spending, I mean, I would like to miss gigs and stay home sometimes, you know.
Or that weird thing where the rehearsal even with your band is better than the gig sometimes. Like just like,
sure.
That was fun. It's like, yeah, let's hope it's this good tomorrow night.
Yeah. Cool, man. So tell me about your writing. Like, so is it inspired by music you listen to, or like, what's that been like over the years?
Well, yeah.
Like, or is it for the players? Like, you speak very highly of the players in the horn band.
Like, definitely like to write for players. You know, like and individuals. Like, I used to have a band called Jazz Story with Lena played trumpet and Rob Clutton on bass and Jean Martin on drums, and it was all about writing for those people, you know, like trying to find things that would make them happy to play. And so I love that. And of course, I learned that from Duke Ellington. Talked about that so much, right? And so I learned that from there and then realized how much fun it was to follow through on that. Mm. It's a great feeling.
And do you teach your students to write?
I do. I haven't done it much like at a post-secondary level. I've mostly done it with, you know, young adults and stuff like that, so I don't really get to get into that. The one thing I try to inspire people to do, because I do it, is to listen to a lot of different kinds of music. Like you mentioned Irish music. I listen to a lot of Irish music as well. Feel like I'm pretty inspired by Irish music. I don't think it comes out really obviously in a lot of my tunes, but I have some where it is really obvious. You know, one of the things that I try to encourage them to do is when you have a phrase or you have an idea, to not compartmentalize, what's the word, like square it up, you know, to like, if it sounds like it's a 5-bar phrase, live with it as a 5-bar phrase and try not to chop off the extra bar or the extra beat or whatever it is. Like, I love things that have, I mean, this tune is case in point, Echo, that we play, like just that it was just a thing that I felt having three beats at the end. I just wanted the tune to start sooner.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun little moment.
I think too, right? Yeah. It's just like, and surprise is so good in music that, you know, it has the element of surprise. So I really encourage that as a teacher, and I look forward in my writing. Like I'm always coming up with slightly weird forms, and mostly because that's just how they come out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't like the idea of trying to write weird to be weird.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you can smell that from a mile away, right?
Totally.
Yeah. I love hearing a great tune that's in 4/4 with 4-bar phrases. And if that's the way it came out, then great. Who cares, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever. You know. But yeah, that would be one of my things that I like to use. What else? I mean, yeah, writing for instruments or writing for people. Like I have that group So Long Seven, which is there's tabla and violin and guitar, and it's a collective.
Mm.
So writing for those guys can be really interesting. Just trying to learn about the tabla and understanding how Ravi Nimpali is the tabla player, and just trying to find ways that he can express himself on a tune and learning about, you know, his technique and everything. There's a lot to learn there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so, like, what are you working on writing now? Like, what are you sort of thinking about? Is it these bands, or do you have sort of...
I am thinking about... So when I wrote this Rhythm Changes that I wrote a couple days ago, I totally thought of this new band with... So this is Andrew Downing on bass and Kelsey Grant on trombone and Lynn Holmesy on violin.
Right.
And I think there's something early jazz about that group. You heard mm-hmm. a couple tunes. Like,
yeah.
You know, we don't sound like an early jazz band, but I feel like it sort of... It speaks to it or something like this.
Right.
You can tell we didn't skip it. Like we were joking around, yeah, right? Yeah. You know, like
have you been listening to that stuff to draw inspiration for the group, or fulfilling the different sort of tempos?
I'm always listening to early jazz music, yeah, for sure. The same way I always listen to bluegrass, I've always got a Fletcher Henderson record out, or a Louis Armstrong or whatever. You know, I feel like, yeah, I don't think I'm specifically trying to cop it, maybe, but I'm just, it's in the air, it's in my house.
Right. And throughout that month, like, it must have been good to shed the tunes. Like, did you kind of keep the sets the same each night?
Yeah.
Did you mix
it
around?
I think we played the same set. We ended up canceling one because of COVID, but all three times we did the same sets. That is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I'm lucky. I actually used to do gigs where we would play the whole week. I did a few weeks at the Senator.
Oh, you did, eh?
Day.
Great.
Yeah. And, yeah. Those were the days. I mean, I caught the very, very, very tail end of that. Yeah. But what a feeling, right? Playing six nights in a row.
Is that better than the weekly, you think? The days in a row?
Oh, it's different. It's more intense. I mean, it's the closest thing to being on the road, I guess, really, right? And playing every night. And, you know, it's even better because you sleep in your own bed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love touring for that reason. Like, music gets to such a higher level, whether it's a week tour or a month tour or... I mean, for me, that's the bomb when that's happening. And the music goes to the highest level. And the last gig, you're like so pumped. And
right.
Yeah, I really enjoy
so it. So I think you got a few years. I think you're about 10 years older than me.
Okay.
And so how's the scene changed since... were you coming up in your 20s in Toronto?
Yeah. Yeah? Yeah.
So how's the...
Well, one really noticeable thing, and I bet you've thought about this or noticed this too, is that the players that are in the universities now are amazing when they're in university.
Yeah.
Like, they're good when they got there.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The Humber players and the U of T players. And it's crazy, actually. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember...
The level is... I mean, I feel like that's human advancement.
Sometimes. That's what I think.
Don't you think, like, maybe we were better than the generation? You know, like, maybe...
I mean, I hope so, but I think it's... Would it be right to say might be exponential?
It's accelerating, right?
Yeah, it's accelerating, I think.
Yeah.
And I blame YouTube, honestly.
Yeah.
I really do. Like... If you want to learn how to be an electrician, you can do it so much faster now. If you want to learn how to be a jazz guitar player, you can do it so much faster now. It's all there.
And that's good, right? Like, that's we don't want to waste time.
I don't think it's bad.
I don't think it's bad.
Yeah, no. I mean, partly because, I'm learning to play the fiddle. I play mandolin. And YouTube helps me like crazy.
Mm.
Hey, YouTube, how come my fingering of my left hand on the fiddle is, you know, the tone's different? You search it up. Someone teaches you a second in a lesson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think that's one of the main changes that I've seen. Also, more players, because U of T's program got bigger. York is still there. Humber's program I don't know about what's going on right there right now, but for a while was really big and really flourishing.
Yeah.
So I felt like the scene was really... You know what else is new? Here's a thing I love and I'm part of, is the improvised music scene.
Mm.
Right? And that's, you know, I say new, I mean last 25 years or so, but there you go. Brand new. You know, I play with Rob Clutton, who's an amazing improvising musician and composer, and that has been an important part of my musical life, and I see it affecting all kinds of music. I see it and hear it in pop music. I hear it in jazz. I feel like the improvised music people are listening more to the jazz people, and the jazz people are listening more to the improvised music people. Yeah. I think it's totally healthy.
There's some mix happening.
Yeah,
maybe more so than before. Right?
Yeah, I think
there is this bit of a segregation between the mainstream and the avant-garde in Toronto for sure.
Why do you think that is?
That's a good question, eh? Like, I mean, I guess the straight ahead is devoted to chord changes and devoted to maybe a narrower view in some cases. Like
I
don't know. That's it. No, the straight ahead is more, has a narrower view.
Right, but why would they?
But it's cultivating a narrower view to a higher level.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I like the way you said that.
Like, I mean, I love both.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
personally,
yeah.
I'm very inspired by the avant-garde. And
when it's played well, either way, you're knocked out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder why, though. You know, it's interesting, you know?
Are artists possibly more open now? I don't know.
I think in some cases we are. I think we all know about more stuff, maybe.
Is it YouTube again? Is it the fact that everything's so, you can get it so quick, right? Like, like when I teach, for example, I'm teaching someone about improvised music, say young adults or an adult or something, and they've never heard of the term. I'll say, well, Derek Bailey. And they say, no, I've never heard Derek Bailey. And I'll put on a video of Derek Bailey playing, right? Mm-hmm. So right away in a lesson, there it is. I mean.
Yeah, we can't take that for granted, because it used to be a time where, like, when I was coming up, I had to travel to Toronto to meet Pat LaBarbera, who had a big stash of videos of these classic jazz musicians that no one else had.
Yeah.
And that's how you got that. You had to get it from Pat, basically, because he hoarded all that stuff.
We share that. I had Pat as a teacher at York, and he was one of my favorite teachers. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Wasn't he great? He's an amazing guy.
But now you cut out Pat, right?
Well, exactly, because it's all there.
You don't need
it. Yeah, I know.
Well, you do.
Well, you need his stories.
You
right?
need him to contextualize.
And his, yeah, and his playing, of course. That's really interesting. Yeah, when you think about it, like, pre-YouTube, which I don't even know if there's... Well, there is a point in talking about pre-YouTube. Yeah, because if I was trying to talk about Derek Bailey, I would have had to say to the student, well, I'll bring the record next week.
Yeah, yeah.
And whether or not I would. But in this case, everything's instant. Boom, there it is. You can watch. You
and
can
the
listen.
Visual. I mean, the visual is huge.
Yeah, the visual thing is huge. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Imagine if YouTube wasn't visual. Like, it would have been great, but it wouldn't have been the same.
No. Yeah, form is interesting.
Yeah.
And you, so you're an early adopter of some of these forms. I mean, you have this very interesting blog.
Yeah.
Going back to what, early 2000s?
Yeah, it might even be the end of 1900s, yeah. Yeah, I know. I love blogging. I was really into it. As you mentioned, I have this weird thing where I get into things early and then I seem to fade. So, for example, like I had email before people had email. I remember we don't need to figure out what year that was, but I got email because we were reading about how in Britain people were, and starting websites. I had a website. And people were like, what's a website? I was like, well, I have one. If you go to this address, well, how do I, it's such an interesting time.
Yeah, go to the coffee shop where they had a computer.
That's what you did. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I got into blogging. Totally remember how I got into blogging, but then I got into podcasting.
Whoa.
And I was telling you before we started that the podcasting thing, people didn't get it. Like, they really, like, I was pitching it to CBC and Jazz FM and, like, you know, actual interviews with these people, and they were kind of like, yeah, it's cool, but I don't see how we're going to use it. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be important. And they're like, no, thanks, we'll pass. And then, so I did my podcast for a while, and then again, I faded. I think it's because people weren't interested, to be honest with you.
Right.
I'm not good. I'm sure you can relate to this. It can be hard in what we do to keep your energy up when there isn't great attendance or great money or whatever. Like, I find no matter how inspired I get, if some people aren't interested in it, man, I can fade sometimes.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah,
whether it's a new song or a new band or a new project or what, there's nothing like someone saying, hey, it's good, keep going. It's like,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if it just means them clicking on your video or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I originally, when I started doing this podcast, I was doing it almost every week for a while, and then so slowed down, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and even have taken a year off during the pandemic, you know.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's, you know, it makes me feel so good to do it.
Right
on. It makes me want
to
do it.
Well, people listen. I was looking back to the old podcast, and people are listening to it, so that's good news.
Yeah, totally.
And the fact that it'll be there for a long time. I was going to say forever, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, we were talking, SoundCloud went down today, you know? So
today.
Currently, all my podcasts are not on iTunes, and they're not on SoundCloud. So they're basically, I mean, I know where they are on my hard drives, thankfully.
Oh, that's good.
They're all backed up.
That's
so
good. Well, hopefully that's just a glitch.
And yeah.
I'm glad to hear you have them, because I think back in the day, I wasn't keeping mine. I think I was putting them online. Yeah. I don't know, I don't have them anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, I know a few of them are spread across a couple different hard drives, but I'm sure I could reassemble them if I had to.
Right.
You know? Yeah. It's interesting when we have these things contained in our minds. I mean, you can kind of count on them being there.
But right.
The moment we start living online,
totally,
we're sort of at the mercy of those things.
Well, I am interested in technology, though. Just all that, you know, I feel like you think of notation software or composition software, like Finale or whatever the one's called that I use.
It's just Sibelius. And Fourscore, Dorico.
Yeah.
I mean, those things changed musicians' lives.
Yeah.
I really witnessed that firsthand when I was in university, because half the arranging students had computers and the other half didn't, right?
Wow.
And the ones that did were saving hours in copying time.
Yeah.
I mean, it also made copyists no longer really a job. But
right. Well, I love that when I was in university, there was no YouTube. We didn't have computers.
Yeah.
You know, there was no internet. I mean, I guess the American army was using it or something, right? But we didn't have access to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's wild.
Let's play off a sheet.
Yeah. Let's play off a sheet of paper.
Yeah, let's see that. Which one do you think?
We can play the rhythm changes. I've been talking about it.
Yeah. Pausecast.
Pausecast. See, there you go.
Like
that
this.
Was my little joke with myself about my own podcast. I'm just going to tune quickly.
Me too.
Okay. I just wrote this, so I hope I can play it. It's a bit tricky, so part of the reason I thought it'd be fun to play is because it is a good example of, I think people will be able to hear this, of how you use how you can use the fifth string, like the drone string on the banjo, and also what they call melodic style. And do you know that term in banjo? So the idea of playing like you're not necessarily going to a higher string when you're playing a higher note, so
right.
So this tune is sort of,
so it's kind of banjoistic.
It is, really, and it was neat when we were warming up hearing you just play the head a little bit, because I thought, oh, it works on guitar too.
yeah,
because it's very, to me, it's very banjoistic, but
the melody you hear, but the shape it produces on the instrument is, you know, has a certain character, you know, and when you go between the guitar and the banjo, I mean, that character changes, right?
I'm not even sure I could play this on the guitar if we switched instruments right now. Like I would really, because my brain is completely wired to
your
physically.
Ears function much better on the banjo. So.
It's not generally. It's just like for this tune, this is how I know how this tune.
Yeah.
So I can definitely go back and forth between instruments, especially now, way better than I ever could before. But this particular tune is just like, it's all about the banjo for me.
Cool.
So we'll see if I can play it.
All right. Pausecast. Tim Pausegate. Let's do it.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. That is maybe a work in progress.
Okay, all right, yeah. So, like, if I wanted to learn how to play single note lines on a five string banjo, what would I do?
Well, I guess I think of it as like a three finger idea, where you're basically often playing, you know, thumb, index, middle in a row,
regardless of direction of motion.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, it's sort of a starting point, and then I break those rules. Sometimes I'll actually work things out where I break the rules, and sometimes it's just more of a feel thing, mm-hmm. You know. It's interesting, like Bela Fleck will often play with just two fingers when he's playing single note lines, which makes a lot of sense.
Lonowski's another one.
Right, true. He does that. Yeah, true. Yeah. He's pretty good. But there's a great player named Ryan Cavanaugh, who's one of the, you know, real stars of jazz banjo, I guess you would say. And he plays with three fingers. And I've hung out with him a couple times, and he's really adamant about it. Like, he really plays with three fingers when he's improvising, and it's wild to watch. He played with...
like, consistently. Like yeah, a guitar player would alternate pick, you exactly. three, yeah. you triple pick.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He played with Bill Evans, the saxophone player.
Oh, yeah.
He had a group called, I think it was called Soul Grass. Sounds wrong to me now, but anyways, Ryan did some wild stuff in that band. sort of a jazz fusion kind of thing, and Ryan was playing electric banjo. It's pretty fun to check out.
Cool. Yeah. So, like, do you shed scales with three fingers? Like,
definitely.
Like,
definitely.
How do you learn the layout of this instrument?
Well,
pardon my ignorance. I mean, no, not this at is all. Obvious too. Like, yeah, a lot of my listeners aren't banjo players, so it would be very interesting.
Well, one of the things that's interesting for me is just having... You basically have four strings, right? Like my lowest string is a D, and then I'm tuned to a G major triad. So. But then...
So it's like a guitar, top four strings of a guitar with a D instead of a high E?
Exactly. Yep. But we have the high drone string.
Right.
Which is what makes everything weird.
G.
Yeah.
Always?
So, I know. Sometimes I have little spikes in here, and if I'm playing bluegrass, it's like a mini capo where you can change your drone. So I'll spike it up to an A or a B sometimes, or you'll tune it to a B flat, depending, because cool. you use capos in bluegrass. But I will. So what I'll do is, like, if I'm going to start playing like a G on the drone string, and then I want to play. So I'm actually playing drone, second string, first string, drone string. I'm fingering the 10th fret for the listeners, 10th fret on the drone string. And then I'm playing the D back on the first string. So it gets really wacky because it's counterintuitive.
Yeah. Would you use that, commonly use that while you're improvising?
Totally. Totally. Really? Yeah. But I feel like I'm just finding the freedom in that now.
Right.
Like, it's taken a really long time because it's not the way... If you go up one string, or just across the strings the way we do on guitar, I mean, we had to learn how to do that, I suppose, right? Mm-hmm. That was, yeah, that's interesting. Because really, the only real logical way to think about pitch is going horizontally up the string, right? Like, mm-hmm. to go...
Right, all the way on one string, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. But we take for granted on the guitar that we will go across the strings and you know, start on the fourth string and, you know, go to the third string, go to the second string, go to the first string. Yeah. I mean, that's something you and I take for granted because that's what we've been practicing for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the banjo, you go the opposite direction to play a higher note sometimes.
Right.
Like that.
So is it sort of like each key kind of has a character, and then it's sort of like a horn, like, you know, I like playing in this key or that key.
So much.
Whereas
so.
Guitar, we're very much trying to transcend keys. All
yeah,
the time,
right? Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, a great player like Bela Fleck doesn't seem to let keys get in the way at all. Man,
right.
he's crazy that way. I feel like I'm learning how to play. I mean, someone once said to me, can you play chromatic music on a banjo? I was like, yeah. I mean, it's all... Right? Those are all great sounds, and they're very comfortable and mm-hmm. bluesy, if you want them to be. Yeah, I'm not sure I answered your question, but...
I suppose it must be useful to be a composer to like, find the things that you...
No, exactly, yeah. Which is another reason it's good to lead the band.
Right.
Like when I if I can learn how to play this new tune eventually... I want to be able to play it really fast, and it's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
You know, just the fingering and just the challenge of getting around the banjo that way.
Yeah. Well, what a nice situation you've created, you know?
Yeah, well, I feel lucky that I get to do it. I mean, I've stuck to it, and people are asking me to do it on a pretty regular basis, so
great.
Good times.
Yeah. And what a convenient instrument. I mean, the banjo can be heard.
It's true.
I love that.
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes people think it's a little too loud, but
but
you know what's funny? The minute there's drums, it can really cut out the banjo, actually. I find that the cymbals, either the cymbals or the overtones of a modern tuned drum set, I've noticed, are hard to deal with. I find, like, sort of a more traditional floppy tuned drum set is easier to play with, but I think a modern drum set with more overtones...
Mm. Do you request that from your drummers?
You know, I don't play with drummers very much. I have so many good friends who are amazing drummers. Like, I could just list off five in my neighborhood, right? And but I don't play with them a lot because it's really challenging. I mean, tabla is a drum, of course, and somehow it's different. I mean, there's no... Well, it's just different. The tabla and the banjo go really well together.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you do have a drum on your instrument.
Exactly.
Do
so
you feel
I'm the drummer.
Drummers? Like...
Do I feel what?
Do you feel connection to drummers, though?
Well, you know the time I feel connection to them? Whenever I end up playing a little bit of country music or rock music, and I'm playing with a drummer, especially if they've never played with a banjo player, like, you know, the rehearsal will start, and I'll go... And you look over, and they're playing the same thing, but they're going... And they're usually laughing, because it's like, no one else in the band is going to play the exact same part as them rhythmically.
Interesting.
But drummers always get a kick out of that, and they didn't see it coming usually.
Yeah.
And I usually go, it's fun, and they go, they love it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, but something's striking about the great banjo players, and about your banjo playing, actually, is how great the time is. like how excellent your time is. Well, and I mean, so there must be something to that connection, you know?
Yeah, I guess because you never stop, in theory, especially right. in bluegrass, right? You're always going. It's very constant.
Right. So the subdivision is something that you work on so much.
Yeah.
That it kind of builds into your into your brains.
And I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And I feel like it's a work in progress. I mean, my favorite banjo player is like when I got to hear J.D. Crow play live, and man, his time was just crazy. Crazy. And anything Bela plays, you know, his time is crazy. So my favorite banjo players, certainly their time is feel good.
Mm.
Feel good all the time, yeah.
Right. So at this stage, what are you trying to get past on the banjo, or what's the next step in your playing evolution?
It's funny, you know, all the things we talked about, I could have said work in progress. Maybe that's just how we are as musicians, but like, so playing this style of that they call melodic banjo, where you're not necessarily moving south to get higher notes, you know, right. being fluent in that for improvising will always be something I could get better at.
Yeah. And how do you tackle that? I mean,
I think it's scale certainly. I think composing challenge. Like this, I'm not lying. This tune that we just played is gonna kick my butt for a couple of months. You know, I want to get it fast. I want to first get to play the right notes, then get it faster. And I think those are the ways I'm gonna go about it. I work on. I definitely work on, you know, fingering patterns. Like there are like basic rolls you learn from the Scruggs book, where you're like things like that, you know.
Right. And do you take those two sets of changes, kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's
yeah.
Banjo is a funny instrument where if you learn the stuff in the right hand and you learn the simple shapes in the left hand, right? It's just kind of a cool sound.
Now, can you do that through rhythm changes? Like, can you do that through a jazz song, like, or like My Funny Valentine, or something?
You can, but it doesn't. I mean,
it's too much.
It's a little too much. Yeah. It doesn't have the flow. I mean, I think there are ways. I mean, sometimes, I think when I'm at my best, I feel like if I can make this instrument sound like a banjo and play other kinds of music, that's when I'm happy.
Mm.
When I'm really playing it more like a guitar, I'm like, you know, there's got to be a way to. I'm working on these little riffs where, just like little dyads. If I'm playing in a key, so it goes like this. Like, if I do like harmonic minor, I'd be like. To me, it sounds like a banjo when I do it, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
and then absolutely. if I add some of the drone string in, and I go like, I bet you can relate in your classical guitar studies to what I'm talking about.
Sure,
in a bit,
sure.
Right? Like so. There's something about threes and twos.
So the character of the line is defined by the articulation that you're using and the particular shape that it is on the banjo. So it's like two notes on one string, one note on the other.
I think so. I think, and I
have a certain right hand approach to that.
Yeah, I have a theory that if one of the notes is on another string, it forces me to push through to give it a little better accent, which is a banjo thing. I think the syncopation in the line that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a characteristic of the banjo that I don't want to lose. So I'm trying to figure out ways to, and that would be one of them to use that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, when I play, like, you know, like if I just go, I feel like I could be playing guitar.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, you could be.
And it's fun, but I just love it more when I. That wasn't a great example, but I just love when I can get the drone string involved and use some of these techniques.
Yeah.
So I think. That's probably what I'm working on, or that is what I'm working on, is all the things, whatever I'm doing, I'm trying to make sure that it sounds like a banjo.
Right.
Which is not obvious, because there's no sort of book to read about that.
No, there isn't. Yeah.
And you know what? This is partly why I've continued playing the banjo, is because, you know, guitar is a fairly young instrument, like in the history of jazz and everything. But the banjo, to me, it feels like there's just hasn't been a lot of creative music played on the banjo yet. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I have the chance to add to that a little bit.
Yeah. Isn't that exciting, eh? To have that before you. Yeah. I mean, I do feel the same way about guitar, though. Like,
yeah.
So much music has not been played on the guitar yet.
Yeah.
Like, it's really easy to find things that have not been done on the guitar.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, yeah. The what's happening with the guitar right now is so exciting because there was a time, I'm probably, someone's going to quote me on this, but there was a time when the guitar player was always the worst player in the band, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah?
Well, you listen to the Charlie Parker records.
Sure.
Right? I mean, the guitar players hadn't really figured out bebop yet, right?
Yeah,
And that sort of carried over slightly after that, too. You would hear, it changed really quick. I mean, mm-hmm. with Wes and, you know, Barney Kessel or
all. It's still a subgenre, though.
Right.
I would say.
Right, yeah, no, exactly.
It's still guitaristic.
But you look at what people are doing right now, like, you know, I listened to your podcast, your interview with David Ocapinti. David does some wild stuff, and then there's the granddaddy, Bill Frisell, and like just the things that are, you know, and the young players, I don't even know all their names. I still think of like Kurt Rosenwinkel as young, but
right.
He's not.
Yeah, he's like my age.
Right. Well, you're pretty young. But there's so many exciting guitar players right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
And doing, like, you know, tapping into things that haven't been done yet, I think.
Yeah, I never understand it when people say, oh, there's no good music anymore. Really? Like, would you not own a subscription to Spotify?
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
No, it's an exciting time. So I feel like I'm kind of part of that, but on a different instrument.
Right. You know? Interesting. Very cool. All right, so what do you have performance-wise coming up? Let people know where they can hear you and how to find you online.
Yeah, that'd be great. My website is guildwoodrecords.com. I mean, I think if you Google my last name, Poskate, you can find me. But I have music on Spotify. I hope to record this new band. I haven't, you know, done that. It doesn't even really have a name. Right now I'm calling it Jazz Banjo. I think it's so stupid that I might keep it. Tim Poskate, right. Jazz Banjo. Like, it's okay. So corny, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know.
But I like it.
We'll see. And So Long 7, the group I keep referring to, has a new record that's going to be out. Now, I think I'm hoping we're going to release it by fall. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be our third record. And obviously it'll be on Spotify. And I'm really excited about that new record. It's sounding great. You know, I play in a bunch of other groups. I play with a group called the Clutter Tones, but these are my main projects that I either co-lead or
great
lead.
Sorry, big year.
Yeah,
forward to hearing it.
I'm just so happy that it's happening again.
Yeah,
right. We were wondering if we were gonna. I forgot what it was like to play in front of people. And
yeah, there's been some false starts too over the pandemic.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like, oh, it's coming back, but then it didn't, and then now seems like now's the time.
Yeah,
I really think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it feels good. It feels just good to see people's faces again, and oh my god.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. And we got the hang of it.
Yeah, it was really nice.
It was great.
Yeah, thanks for the hang.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, well, let's play another tune.
Okay. The Wind.
The Wind, okay.
Oh yeah, I stole some of the chords from Jimi Hendrix on this one. Although, I didn't realize while I was writing it, this is one of those funny ones where I wrote most of it and then realized that it was sort of stolen from The Wind Cries Mary. And then I really went for it. In the bridge, I went to the...
Now, is that a D or an E?
Ding, 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 ding. What's happening there? Ding, 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 ding. Oh, that's a D.
Should be D.
Weird,
right?
Eh?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I wonder how many other people have made that mistake.
I'll remember.
Okay, yeah. At least we can read music.
Yeah.
So this part's tricky, obviously, the little ending thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, when I have trouble with it, I have trouble when we play that last shot and still feeling where one is going back into this. I'll do the best to cue us back to the top.
Okay, thank you. And then we improvise on the whole form. And
yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Great.
Are you gonna play? Sort of shots there.
Sure.
I mean, I'll play it regardless of what you do, but we'll give it a shot and see what happens. All
right.
So I'll play the melody right in.
Sure.
And are you gonna play something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know what you were gonna do.
I can do that.
I don't know if I've ever played this with another guitar player, so it'll be fun. Do 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 one. Oh, how's it written? One and two. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Thanks.
Likewise. Yeah. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Oh, cool.